across the galaxy. This is where conspiracy on the wild side meets the perspective of a lifetime. This is the Free Zone with your host, Freeman.
Hello and welcome to the Free Zone. Well, guys, you know we're in the age of revelations, right? This is the apocalypse. It may be hokey, but this is it. This is the revelation that the world has been waiting for. It's a revelation of everything, right? But as we look around, everything that you're discussing, everything that you're seeing, everything that's considered important in 2020 is a mere distraction from the big picture. But the truth is rising to the surface. And there seems to be a massive campaign to squash it. But I'm telling you guys, reality is about to go bye-bye. So I learned that a wonderful festival conference is coming to Greenville, South Carolina, the Flattoberfest. Yes, how we will learn a flat earth conference ended up in Greenville, South Carolina is beyond me, but I'm thrilled to death because, well, I live here, so I'm going. There's no doubt about that. Flattoberfest. Flattoberfest.com is the website if you guys want to get in on this. And tonight, we're going to dig in. I invited three of the speakers, four counting me. I'm not speaking, but of us to come together and kind of just lay this idea out for people and understand its purpose and its importance. So I'm really thrilled to throw reality to the wind and start to get understanding as to how we could have been lied to for our entire existence and how reality can change in such dramatic ways with just understanding and simple logic. So let's dig deep. Tonight we are talking with Karen B. She is the host of Flattoberfest, setting this whole thing up. And we have James True. You know him well from the Free Zone. And Jason Lindgren, who you also know from this program and his work with Crow 777, getting deep into all the high strangeness. All of these guys are amazing. It's going to be quite a show to hold the horses on all of this discussion. And I can't wait to just jump in. So let's dig deep, guys. And let's start and get into Flat Earth and understanding its purpose and its importance. So Karen, I thought maybe we'd start with you because you are the every Joe in a way that you kind of set up to debunk Flat Earth. Let's be honest. The Flat Earthers were a bit fanatical. It's like you either believe or you're an idiot. And it kind of threw some people in the wrong direction. Like, well, hold on. If you want me to change my entire worldview, I'm going to need some details. And it seemed like the Flat Earthers were quite fanatical on social media as trying to really get their point across. So you kind of came into this. You found that, tell us about the ride. Tell us how you ended up just even being interested in the Flat Earth topic.
Okay. I was sort of like everybody else. Nothing about the way things were set up in the world ever really sat right with me. I never liked authority. I was always sort of a nonconformist. I had a lot of angst when I was younger. And I always felt like I was born at the wrong time or in the wrong place. I just felt very out of place most of my life and didn't understand.
Right now, every listener is saying, I relate.
Exactly, right? I just didn't understand why I felt this way or why I was always so upset and I had just so many unanswered questions. And so once I got, older and started living life and, kind of being in the system like everybody else and seeing how things worked out, it's just like, well, this isn't right. So you just sort of start going down that rabbit hole, you know? And then it started for me with like politics and government and governmental corruption, financial corruption, fractional reserve banking, you know, all that sort of stuff, just because I noticed, you know, from the time from in my lifetime when I was young, you know, or people before my age, their families were used to be able to live off of one income. And the mother used to be able to stay home and raise her children, and the father was able to provide for the whole family. And I saw this becoming less and less of a viable option for people in my lifetime. It just, you saw that middle class just start shrinking and the divide getting greater, and the upper management of these big tech companies, you know, they're making, raking in all kinds of money, and the people at the bottom are making less, and it just became so expensive to live. I grew up in the San Francisco Bay Area, and it got to the point where I couldn't even afford to live, even though I felt like I was making a decent living. I got a job like $17 an hour, which back in 2000, that was a decent paying job. And I still couldn't afford to live on my own. You know, I was looking at paying like $700 a month to live in a tiny room under a freeway. And it just became so frustrating. So you start to look at how things work and how things have been set up in this system, and how it's sort of set up to for people to, you know, be constantly working and trying to get ahead, but never quite getting ahead, and how everybody's born into debt, and this debt can never actually be repaid. And so that's where it started for me. And then once you start getting into that, you know, it really doesn't take long for you to come across the deeper, darker things that go on in this world. You know, I started coming across things like Ted Gunderson, and he was this man saying that the planes were spraying chemicals in the sky and there were satanic pedophiles running the government. And, you know, and I saw that and I just thought, oh, that's insane. The things to me that sound insane. And now I'm like, I find myself saying it. Satanic pedophiles run the world. And it's just crazy.
And it's front page news now, right?
Right. And now they're like they're putting it in your face. They don't even hide anymore. And it just blows my mind, you know, watching the whole world sit like frogs in boiling water. It's like nobody even gets it. And so that's how I got into this, because come across my feed, and I started seeing flat earth videos come up. And I thought that stuff was ridiculous because I was looking at all this other stuff and I'm like, no, there's way more important stuff to think about, to worry about than this. But really, it's all connected. And once you see the truth of it and what it means that we don't live on a spinning ball and that we do live in a completely different universe than what we were told, I mean, that's huge. I mean, spiritually, mentally, just it opens up a whole new world. It's like once you start going down this rabbit hole and you get to flat earth, and like for a second you're like, this is it. It's like I just have this vision of when all the puzzle pieces start coming together, when I finally realize that, you know, we don't live in a spinning ball in space, and how this all connects. It's like those scenes in the movie of a montage where somebody has like an epiphany, and then all these scenes start, you know, coming in from the background. Like you start imagine, you know, thinking back to all these moments in time, all these thoughts that you've had in the past, and it all just comes together beautifully when you realize you don't live where you were told, and you get it. And then, well, then it's like a whole new world opens up, and then you start relearning everything and finding out, you know, how things really work in this world. And you know, that's just a whole nother adventure in and of itself.
Right. No doubt about that. Oh my God. You just don't even know when you're speaking crazy, right? Like, right. Oh, but no, that's just real. You know, we're just talking about reality. So Jason and James, feel free to chime in. It seems that, Flat Earth has been around for a long, long time. People have been battling for this, and that it actually gets dangerous. Like any conspiracy theory that you try to bring to the surface, there's been physical attacks on people. There's been, you know, just doxing of, you know, or just it's not an easy thing to bring the truth to the surface. And it you guys are following in the footsteps of others. There's people that have gone back, like Dr. Samuel Rowbotham, getting into Earth is not a globe. There are people that have been trying to bring this to the surface. So this isn't something new is kind of what my point is, right? And it's kind of dangerous. And the people that have been talking about it receive a lot of ridicule and attack, wouldn't you? All of you agree?
Oh, totally. Yeah. And you're talking about the Rowbotham work. That's what Crow actually uses as his main example for things are misdescribed. And the fact that Rowbotham did that so long ago, and you could reproduce that today just with the whole lighthouses thing. And I've done something similar.
When did he write that? Do you know?
I think it was late 1800s, if I remember correctly. I can find out in a second.
So the folks know this is Jason Lindgren talking. Why do I call you Grim? Gren. Lindgren.
I'll get Lindgren, yes.
I'll get it straight. Anyway, just so everybody knows who they're hearing. Okay, so yes, Dr. Samuel wrote this back in the 1800s. Please carry on, sir.
Right, so that's what Crow is leveraging his work off of. And of course, being his partner, this is something that we talk about a lot. Although lately we've been getting into law like crazy, which is its own crazy conspiracy thing. But right. I've never been like a diehard, like a lot of people are very obsessive about Flat Earth. I see tons of inconsistencies. This is my big thing. I see inconsistencies all over the place that I want answers to.
Right.
So I don't claim any one model. I don't claim any one thing because I don't think we can prove it at a layman level. But there are things that we see that absolutely don't work with the way things are presented. And that is where I come from, most especially from the social engineering perspective.
Right. And it trying to get people to understand a new idea, especially changing your entire cosmology. I mean, that's huge, right? Because, I mean, I grew up with NASA. I grew up, you know, my first memory was the landing on the moon, and I don't believe that was real at all. But at the same time, it's taken me a long time to not think of things in planetary form. But when we start to look at this puzzle, we realize that navigation is on a plane, not spherical. And there's a lot of little things in our world that empirically could show us that the world is not as we think. I mean, I would just to throw my little bit, the idea of something trying to stay on a spinning ball for me and then the idea of gravity holding it there just never made any sense to me in the first place.
Yeah. That never made sense to me. And also the vacuum of space next to Earth without Earth losing its atmosphere. That one always puzzled
me. What do you guys say?
Well, Freeman, before you ever had me on, this is James True speaking. Before you ever had me on, I had started a novel about artificial intelligence in space and it was satellites. And so I was doing like years and years and years of research on satellites themselves. And probably the worst day in my life was when I realized I don't believe that this is real. All the research that I put into how these things are supposed to maneuver themselves up in space, how all the equipment's supposed to stay working for decades and decades, how there's never a software update or a firmware problem, which requires a cold boot, which is anyone who works computers for a living knows there's going to be times where you're going to have to do a cold boot. Something's going to freeze, something's going to break. And I kept trying to make sense of what satellites were telling me. And it led me where I think most flat earthers are truly zeteticists, really. And this isn't even a new idea. It's an idea that was around before the world's fairs of the turn of the century. When the 20th century started, there was all these world fairs where people were going around claiming that the world was a ball. And they were using Foucault's pendulum and they were flushing toilets and watching the way the swirl went. They were claiming that snipers were having to pull out massive calculus in the middle of a field before they shot bullets. And it was only through slowly looking at all the data, especially all the lies that are around us, that I realized all I'm doing is losing electricity by assuming everything that I'm told is true versus assuming everything I'm told is false. And once you got over the electrical discomfort of having to seriously pull every single thing out of your house, like your psychic house that's ever been there, put it on the lawn and start over and only bring things into your house that you can directly perceive, test, verify, or feel, you end up with a completely new world. And that new world requires a lot of calories to set up. But once you have that set up, you end up with this foundation, almost like a karate training, where all the lies that you hear from that point on have to suffer through a scrutiny, like a gauntlet that you've never had to apply before. And you find yourself with a really, really tight network, a teleology almost, where now you're looking at the world and it's only through tangible things that you can prove and verify. And once you find yourself in that new plane, in that new space, you have all this extra electricity that you're not dedicating to certain beliefs, to certain rumors, to certain ideas. You simply just get to build your world off of what you can physically prove, see, touch, or think, or feel. And that leaves you with so much more confidence, so much more charisma, electricity. Again, all these calories are now at your disposal, and you end up standing a lot taller. So even as a psychology, I think that this idea of Zetetics, or if you want to call it flat earth, that's fine too, leaves you feeling more confident and in a much better place to deal with Dojo Earth, with this entire system as it truly is versus how we've been told it's supposed to be.
That makes a lot of sense. I mean, just getting rid of all the riffraff, you know, the Masons, right? They say, polish the cube, right? Get rid of all superfluous material and make it a perfect cube. So all that superfluous, that's such a hard word to say, material in our brains that is really guiding us without us even realizing, because we're functioning on systems that don't work the way that we think they do. Gravity, electricity, you know, nobody knows how these things work. We just know what they do. We don't know why they're there, right?
Well, a lot of these things are theories still. Even gravity is called a theory. And this is something a lot of people who even like to do debates on these concepts. There's only three laws, the three laws of thermodynamics and physics. Everything else is a theory. Theory of relativity, theory of gravity. So keep that in mind when people are arguing these points.
And the theory of evolution. So how does this tie in with like dinosaurs? And do you have anything with like the theory of evolution, Darwinianism? And
Well, there's big holes in it, that's for sure. But yeah. Hey, I don't want to monopolize this conversation.
No, go ahead.
Go ahead. I mean, there are big holes in it. For me, I don't buy into evolution anymore. I don't believe it's true, because there is, you know, no evidence of a change of kind, which is essentially what they're saying is happening. They're saying, you know, spineless blobs turn into things that have spines, turn into birds, turn into reptiles or whatever.
Right.
It just doesn't make any sense. Adaptation is real, you know, on a micro level, that sort of thing. But change of kind, yeah, I don't believe that anymore.
Right. Wouldn't all South Africans be black by now? Right?
There'd be no monkeys, that's for sure, because they all would have evolved into what we call people now.
Right.
But the problem with evolution is that evolution actually works great if you look at how a zygote develops into a human being. The actual growth process itself shows you an evolutionary fractal that's unfolding, right? As we develop our triune brain, our reptilian, that first inner core, it develops the mammalian lobes around it. So now we've turned from lizard to mammal, and then from mammal to human with our frontal lobes on top of that. So the idea of evolution itself is true in the sense that you would spin something up like a fractal. So if you could imagine that it's almost as if God has a dimmer switch on inside of DNA. And if he turns it all the way up to say 7 out of 10, you end up with a human. But if he turns it down to like 3, then you end up with like a snake, maybe 5s around a mammal or a dolphin or something like that. So there's this intrinsic sort of idea that you see how these parts fit together, you know, because man himself is a combination of several different systems. So I think that's what's caused so much strife when we try and apply evolution itself to a theory of origin, which has never, ever been shown. If you look at how many lies have been put forth as claiming to be missing links, lies that lingered in the scientific community for 50 years, solid, like solid through every single school and university. Piltdown Man is just one of many. So you see, when you're finding an organization that's calling itself science, that's systematically using lies to insert, to fill in the narrative, then you can start to understand that, wait a minute, what we're calling science is not actually science. It's a different form of religion, a sort of white collar, highbrow religion, and we've fallen for it. So the dogma has been shellacked over in pretending to be concrete. And we end up in the system we have now where we value atheism, which is truly just scientism, in favor of even our own senses, which is really shows you the devotion that's required and the evacuation that's required of you and your own personal autonomy so you can adopt and submit to this system of credentials over experience, credentials over wisdom, credentials over personal senses themselves. It's a very, very, very dangerous place that we've made for us all.
Yes. You keep making me think of Stranger in a Strange Land, which of course is a Martian story, so it wouldn't fit in. But they had these perfect witnesses that would only agree to what they could empirically take in. And I right. always like that thought and theory. Well, I was thinking about, you know what, we need to describe this flat plane. I want to understand what it would look like, what it would be like. So I don't know that everyone has that knowledge of, you know, ice walls, oceans, and how this all actually looks. What is it if it's not a globe?
Well, before anyone answers, I want to say that I think primarily what's built into this flat earth or Zetetics or anything else is that we would like to re-embrace mystery again.
Yes.
What I mean by that is that we have a tendency, an addiction to want to solve mystery, to want to end darkness, right? This comes from a primal urge where it's dark outside. I can't see what's coming. And so you end up with this fetish where you're trying to solve. And I think that's what's caused scientism to develop. In other words, right. Our pursuit of science has turned into a religion because they're trying to provide comfort pellets for all of us to eat. And it's very, very comfortable to explain to everyone that, hey, all the world that could ever be known, all the land that could ever be discovered, all the mountains that could ever be climbed, all the rivers that could ever be crossed are known. In fact, they're so known that they fit inside of a single shape that you can know and understand. And this gives us a comfort. A very, very comforting feeling that we have. It gives us a sense of security because we've removed the mystery from the model. And so I noticed that a lot of flat earthers really, really struggle with people that are trying to embrace this because they're looking at someone that is having to let go and embrace mystery. And we don't have any kind of incentive or any kind of training for that. We're taught the exact opposite, that the key is to remove mystery. So before we even get into the models, I want to say that I think psychologically, what we need to do is fall in love with the unknown again. We need to understand that if we could have a golden ratio at all times, everything you know is only 61.8% of the truth, the rest is mystery. I think you'll find that even having that buffer for the mystery is not only built into the system that God put us in, but is absolutely necessary for us to even discern more truth, because we need that flexibility of mystery, of abyss, of the yin in order to pull the yang from it. Without that empty space, we're not able to summon something that we've never imagined before that would allow us to fit in the missing pieces of what's actually there.
I believe when people say conspiracy theory, they actually mean mystery. When they say there are no conspiracies, what they're really saying is there's no mystery left. We know everything. Mm-hmm. Right?
But that term has become...
Yeah, it's been crossed in there. And well, as Karen was saying in the beginning, though, right now is the perfect time for us to get the truth into people, because everything's up in the air right now. Everybody's in a, like, what the hell's actually going on right now? And, you know, so much truth started bubbling up out of the World Wide Web that, you know, something had to be done to shut us all up, right?
Yeah.
I've strongly suspected that's what's going on, because there's more than enough data to prove that the current situation, whatever you want to call it, is possible. Now, there may have been something going on 6 months ago, but like all these things, it passed and that's that. And what are we seeing right now? We're seeing a nearly worldwide totalitarianism being stomped down on us. And there's got to be reasons for that, because we know that there's no data to back up the excuse of what they're doing.
Right. Exactly. And that's why I wanted to get deep into this. So
if you want to talk about dinosaurs for a minute, Crow and I dug into that big time a few years ago. And what we found out was dinosaurs didn't exist until one British dude came up with the concept. And then it just kind of took off from there. And then it became a pissing contest between a couple of other dudes wanting to do the next best thing. And it was all fiction. They were taking whatever they could find and extrapolating off of it and just making all this stuff up, and all of a sudden it's the biggest thing. Now, I'd love for them to be real, because just like you, I grew up with NASA and all the pictures and all loving all that, wanting to be an astronaut. And along with NASA, I was also into dinosaurs. And I'd love for that to be true. But when you actually start digging into the history, you find out nobody even spoke about a dinosaur before. I forget what year, I think it was the 1890s. But before that, there were no dinosaurs. That was not a thing. At all.
Right.
And every dinosaur skeleton you've ever seen,
that's what I was just
in case gonna people ask. Don't know this, if you go to a museum, every dinosaur skeleton you're looking at is a facsimile by their own admission.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Kind of suspicious.
Yeah. Yeah. For real. I mean, I went to one of these local museums around here too, and they had some fake bones on display, and I took pictures of them, and then I just came home and I did like a Google reverse image search, and I was like, okay, well, this weird vertebrae that they say came from this weird dinosaur looks like a whale vertebrae.
Right.
And this, you know, this velociraptor claw looks like the claw of a very large bird of prey. So
yeah,
it starts to become easy where they can just sort of pick things up and just paint a different picture for what it is.
In fact, I would like to even raise that even more to suggest that I could describe how an entire blackmail economy would be a very, very profitable thing in place that would need something as large as dinosaurs are fake or space is fake to build an entire system, an economy based off blackmail. Because psychopaths can't trust each other because they're psychopaths. So instead of doing that, they have to behold each other through blackmail into a lie, into a public lie that can be exposed. So if you start to look at what the ISS truly is, what NASA truly is, what even dinosaurs truly are, you find that it's a very, very convenient system for countries themselves to participate in international blackmail with each other, where each of them are beholden to the fact that they could be exposed for frauds. This kind of gives them a system of trust where they're allowed to work together in a way, because they have a mutual destruction. I believe nuclear weapons are the same part of that same system, by the way. And that because of how gullible people have been, because of how easy it is for us to simply believe what science tells us, you know, starting with special relativity, which was just an absolute joke, what they were trying to pass on us, it really gave the go-ahead for literally any kind of blackmail program to begin. And that started with Sputnik. If you notice that once Sputnik, the first satellite that was ever launched, came from Russia, within 2 years, we were in a desperate, desperate war to compete with them. And having two countries both claim that all this is real, that satellites are real, that we could land on the moon, that the vacuum of space is legit, you now create a verified system where no one would ever doubt it, because, well, Russia says it's real. and we hate Russia, therefore we must, it must be real too. So you end up with this, not only is are there two competing sides that are agreeing, but you also have this space race drama that's thrown on top of it, where the sanctity of our very lives relies on how fast we can get to space, which gives you zero opportunity to even question whether or not it's even legit, which of course it isn't.
It's been a massive part of Trump's campaign that we will have the first woman on the moon and that we will have the first flag on Mars. It's been a major part of his campaign. We have the Space Force, right? Obviously, that came up out. But see, now I'm one of those people that just can't accept that they're launching all the rockets they do. There's like five rocket launches a week these days that even if they're landing back on their SpaceX platform in the ocean, which looks totally fake, I still can't not believe that they're putting up a grid of Starlink and this type of, because I'm not able to accept the idea of them wasting all that money to keep a big show going. Why launch three rockets in one day SpaceX tried to do?
Something's there.
But for me, let me just be clear
Okay.
real quick, because so that people realize the space station and these satellites are only supposed to be 200 to 400 miles up. All right. So we're not talking outer space here, guys. So when we're talking about these type Starlink and the International Space Station, they could still easily be within the firmament. You know, we're still only talking about 200 feet up or 200 miles up. Yeah.
Yep. I think what you're looking at is, first of all, we've had a Satellite program in place since the very beginning, the very, very, very beginning. We've been using balloons for high altitude everything. And I think that the SpaceLink that you're looking at now is a high altitude balloon program. However, the rockets themselves are nice and showy. They have a nice big sparkle to them. They passes back into the Masonic days where we launched 32 Saturn rockets, which is ironic because in Freemasonry, there are 32 degrees before the primal 33rd. And those degrees are actually called profane. So it's kind of like they're admitting that, yeah, these are all bullshit. We can't do the 33rd because 33 is real and we can't make a 33rd rocket. This is like the most powerful sparkler you could ever imagine that's selling this amazing idea. It even looks like a giant phallus. It's spewing itself into the air. It's piercing air. It has all the symbolism that you would want. And I believe that that's truly what they were selling was the symbolism. But meanwhile, the entire time, they're just having a very sophisticated and very effective satellite balloon program. So 200 miles is actually too high for these things. You wouldn't even need that. No civilians even allowed above 50,000 feet. So if you consider that basically anywhere above 50,000 feet is secure classified space, only a few certain people are even going to know what's even allowed to go up there. Then when you start to look at the U2 program, you realize that right now, as we're speaking, there are 33 autonomous B-2 bombers that are flying above us that are completely operated by remote control. And that these systems are perfect for things like high altitude surveillance, weather sighting, anything that you could possibly want a satellite to do could easily be handled by these plane platforms. A plane platform that you can land, plane platform that's fully refuelable in air, one that's fully autonomous, requires zero persons to even be up there. So if we have this capability, why are we going to this extra harder effort to put meth forts up in space wrapped in tinfoil and pretend that these are the things that are staying up there for 30 or 40 or 50 years without a problem? It just makes no sense at all.
Now, I can back you up on the whole satellite being on balloons thing, because during the research for the presentation I'm going to do for the conference, I found not one, but two blatant lies, one on NASA's website and one on Wikipedia, regarding the shape of the Earth and balloons being able to see the curvature. Because today, if you listen to any of the mainstream narrative, they blatantly tell you, you cannot see anything until you're up past the Kármán line. And if you don't know what the Kármán line is, that's the hypothetical place 60 to 70 miles up where they say space is starting to begin and then the Earth is ending. But on NASA's own website, while I was looking at historical stuff, they blatantly said that when they were launching balloons in the 30s and 40s, that you could see the curvature of the Earth. It's a blatant lie. Completely contradicts everything they say. And then on the Wikipedia page for the gentleman named Picard, who Captain Picard from Star Trek is named after, doing his launch with his brother, they said he could see the curvature of the Earth. Well, let me tell you something. Balloons can only go to 121,000 feet at most today, with the best quality ones before they pop. Not possible to see anything. So as far as anyone is concerned, you cannot see a curvature unless you go up above the Kármán line, and none of us are doing that.
Right. This is a very difficult thing to prove, and now I think it was Virgin that canceled and went down. They were just about to have public space flights, and they've really been working towards this, but suddenly the company went bankrupt, right?
Space is hard.
Yeah.
Virgin went bankrupt now?
It was one of those, yep. I can't think of the name. It might have been Virgin, though.
No, you're right. In fact,
that the company went bankrupt, but their idea.
Yeah, their program. They decided to scrap it like right before they were getting ready to do it. Just like Trump is promising to put boobies on the moon, but only right after his reelection. After his term ends, right? He told you 5 years, right? Which is so convenient. How every single president has made this promise, and they always make the promise, as soon as I'm out of office, like 3 days after I'm out of office, we're going to be landing on Saturn. We're going to bring Jiffy Pop, the whole thing. It's going to be amazing, you know? And so you're allowed to just kick this can down the road. Guys, they've been telling us we've been going back to the moon since the moment we didn't go to the moon. They've been promising, we're going to go back. It's going to be great. Golf carts are nothing.
Tech.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, all through the 2000s. They spent millions and millions. All through the 2000s, there were programs, millions of dollars spent. Bush W. did it, and then Obama did it with the Constellation program, and now they're doing it again with the Orion program. And they spent tens of millions of dollars on these things, and yet the next dude in line comes in, and all of a sudden, no, we're not doing that. We're going to do this. So what are you talking about? How much money have you just thrown away?
Or used for something else, right?
Or used for something else, which is what I strongly suspect NASA is. It's a funneling system.
Right.
It's a propaganda machine.
Well, right, but you don't need $54 million a day for that. I mean,
right.
Come on, they can't even make movies that look good enough, but that might be revelation of the method too, so who knows?
Well, I realized that my cosmology actually fit within a flat Earth model, and so UFOs, I always thought the Grays, and they are the only aliens I tend to follow because there's just, you know, a plethora of information, and that's where we began with UFOs and Grays. But there's no reason that Grays need to be extraterrestrial. Why wouldn't they be subterrestrial? Why wouldn't a Gray alien that has no skin pigment and looks like an ant with big black eyes not be subterranean? I mean, it looks like a subterranean being to me. So for me, UFOs, the flying saucers, they don't come from outer space. In my cosmology, they come from inner Earth, or more subterranean Earth.
I remember reading a lot of eyewitnesses talking about seeing UFOs coming from underwater, or seeing them go into the water and then basically becoming a submarine. So
that's a huge thing. UFOs are massive compared to UFOs, but people don't really talk about it. I guess it's just not as sexy of a topic.
Because how can a flying saucer fly from a distant star, Zeta Reticuli or whatever, and then crash here?
Very
true. Exactly right. Like, it made it all the way here to crash in Roswell. Like, come on.
yeah. But subterranean Earth, I mean, that story goes deep. It goes far. The guy who put the pyramid on the dollar bill, Nicholas Roerich, he was paid by the government to go into these subterranean chambers and meet with the Tibetan monks that live down there in these massive crystalline castles that he paints. And, you know, so the government's funded subterranean campaigns. They have subterranean warfare going on right now. It seems to make more sense that maybe there's this race that has lived on this planet all along, and they're not from outer space at all. And then the idea...
Well, that sounds like the Hopi...
Yes.
Sorry.
No, go ahead.
Well, it sounds like the Hopi... The old Hopi legends, Freeman, are exactly like that, right?
The Anasazi.
A group of ant people from underground... Yeah. A group of ant people from underground came to the surface and gave us information that we would need for the future. They promised of a coming rainbow family that would rise up with a new sensation, some type of new sense that they would have, and they would heal the earth. This has been one of the oldest legends. Yep, exactly. And you and I know it because that's where we met, Freeman. So all of these prophecies are already predisposed. They're already working that way anyway. So,
well, so then the other one is ancient aliens. I've never, ever, ever bought into aliens coming here and planting pyramids on the planet and then flying off to wherever they went.
Well, it's because you don't have the hair for it, man.
Yeah, cyclical catastrophes make sense to me and are more provable. So again, no extraterrestrials involved in my cosmology at all. There's no need for other planet stars or anything for any of this to be true. Atlantis gets destroyed. They have high technology, but their manufacturing is gone. So they have to use mud tools and things to start over again. So then you get Egypt. So they have all the knowledge, but none of the tech. And they have to start from mud huts and work their way back up again. But they're already a high civilization, but they've been devastated by a cyclical catastrophe. So even the pyramids don't require extraterrestrial sources. Cyclical catastrophes completely cover that.
Well, let's throw a hypothetical out here. If indeed the mainstream astronomical model is correct, and if indeed some sort of highly intelligent life is coming to our planet from another planet, the technological level they would have to be at to be able to do that would be so far beyond anything. It'd be like us going up to an anthill, picking it up and going, oh, look, an ant, and putting it back down. There, and then that ant would have no idea what happened, couldn't relate it, couldn't even come close to understanding the concepts of what scale of insanity just happened to it. That's how an alien life form would be to us. Because you got to think about the fact that, just going totally hypothetical, if the mainstream model is correct, the distances and the power requirements are just obscene. And we aren't even anywhere close to figuring anything like that out. Like, they can't even make their own equations work. They don't even have a grand unified theory because they keep trying to shove gravity in there and it doesn't work on a macro and a micro scale. I mean, I could go on and on about this stuff, but it just doesn't work. So if those things hypothetically are true, they're so far beyond us that we couldn't even hold a conversation with them over a cup of tea.
Well, that's where wormholes and bendy space-time comes in, Jason.
Right. Well, I know, but again, and there has been math done. I used to be so into this stuff. They've come up with math on how you would do that, and the amount of energy required to hold a stable wormhole open mathematically is, again, stupid obscene.
Well, you know, all these astrophysicists have all, that's one thing I've realized over the years, because like you guys too, I was way into space and science TV, Discovery TV, and I was watching all those space, you know, cartoon things, and I loved watching it with the string theory and all that stuff. I watched all that stuff. I totally geeked out on all that stuff. But yeah, I realized that all these astrophysicists are just glorified mathematicians. They're like fairy tale tellers with fancy math skills.
Well, don't forget, they're also, to be crude about it, they're all wanking each other off too. You know, they're just taking each other's things and patting themselves on the back. Oh, that's brilliant. Yes, I think I'll take your equation and add my equation in now. And then this has been happening for decades, and it's not provable. Like, none of this is provable.
Exactly.
So let's talk a little, as we're working towards the end of this hour, a little bit about what changes in humanity as they start to realize a life-changing scenario such as the earth is flat and not round, that you have been lied to your entire existence, that nothing is at all what you think it is. Gravity, you have no clue. Electricity, you have no clue. People finally start to realize they actually have no clue as to what runs life on planet Earth, how it all happens. And so I want to lead us into more of the positives of humanity. Because right now there's a battle against the heart field. Right now there's a battle that's keeping us from being face to face. And I believe that COVID, BLM, everything that's going on is cover, a distraction to keep us, because these truths are coming to the surface and people are really starting to take to them. And so the the essence that comes out of this, the freedom that gives you the vibe to spread your heart field and start to energize the rest of humanity around you. I know all three of you enjoy talking about that. So I would like to bring us into the positive aspects of how dismantling your reality and then remantling it, if that's a word, it then frees you to this level of being fully human. Any of you got?
Well, I'll tell you one thing I've noticed with anybody who challenges, who is at the point where they're challenging the actual concept of where they live, they don't really fall for any of the other poppycock. I don't know anybody who's into flat earth, for instance, who doesn't see straight through the COVID nonsense. They don't want to wear a mask. They certainly don't buy that there's some deadly pandemic going on. No one's getting sick. Like, again, there may have been a flu 6 months ago, and I've had people who supposedly worked in hospitals said, yes, something was going on, but it's over now. And they've just kept this deception going this whole time. As a matter of fact, somebody just contacted me yesterday to tell me that he had to go to the ER, and he was offered $10,000 to be able to put on his paperwork that COVID is the reason he's there. Complete utter nonsense. He's got a blood clot. So you can see that there's some mass deception going on here. What gain would they have? And people who are as far as challenging the notion of the very place that they live and the notion of all that, they see through all this. So there's an open-mindedness and a higher-mindedness associated with this that you just don't fall for the bullshit anymore. And if something is being presented by a mainstream source where you know that they're feeding you lies for how long, you automatically challenge it and just try to look at things from a much more open-minded and intelligent perspective. And you're not just swallowing whatever's sold to you.
Yes, sir.
Bring it on, Karen. I brought this one up for you.
Yeah, I agree with that, with everything Jason just said. But yeah, when I first found out about Flat Earth, I have to admit that one of the first things that happened is I went and I got really depressed. I got very depressed. I remember sitting at my desk and looking at the screen, and it was like that moment the light bulb went off when I was like, I saw it, like I saw that it was possible, and I was like, oh shit. You know, and it's just like I had this crazy sinking feeling in my chest, and I like started sweating, and I put my head in my hands. I mean, I really was like, wow. And for the next like 2 weeks or a week, I'm not even sure exactly how long, but it had to be at least a week, I felt like I was in a complete daze, and I just was walking around with like this internal dialogue going on, like looking around at me like, well, if that's not what it is, well, what really is going on around here? And I'd be looking outside and looking at the sun and looking at the moon and just thinking about everything that I've ever witnessed and how all of it works so good on a flat earth. It's like, and even better, if you start to break these things down, you know, you make a list like works on a globe or works on a flat earth. Everything works on a flat earth. Some things work on both, but there's nothing that works just on a globe. And, you know, once you get to that point, after I got out through the depression side of it, I actually started to feel very relieved. I started to feel good because I was like, you know, because you start looking around at everything that's being thrown at you, everything, all the data that's being, you know, fed to us, like Jason saying, all the lies and stuff, and you realize that it's not true. Space isn't trying to kill you. The asteroid that they keep telling you is danger close every month is not really there. There's nothing, there's no giant rock from outer space is going to come and destroy the world. You know, the sun is never going to go, you know, red dwarf and expand and swallow up the whole solar system, because that's not where we live. So that part of it, after I got through the depression of being lied to and sort of going through this like self-deprecation where I was like, God, you idiot, why didn't you see that before? You know, how could you be so stupid? Because once you see it, it seems so obvious. But once you get through that, it starts to get better and better and better. And then you start talking to other people who see it, and then you realize you're not alone. And then you realize that you're all asking the same questions, and that you're all, you know, and that's where, you know, over the years we've ended up where we're surrounded by other people who are highly intelligent, who don't believe the nonsense, who aren't afraid, who aren't living their lives in fear, who don't, you know, go around spewing fear porn, trying to make everybody afraid of everything, or who don't believe in telling other people what to do, who understand what free will is and do no harm and cause no loss, and realize that, you know, you just start to get to these places where you realize you don't need this government. You don't need somebody over your shoulder, you telling you how to live, and that there's no scarcity. Like the planned scarcity, like they tell you, oh, this is going to happen. We're going to run out of fuel, fossil fuel. Everybody needs to do this. You need to reduce your CO2. And you realize none of that is true. And so for me, after getting through that part of it, it just became a huge relief. And the world is a much better place for me now, aside from, you know, the liars who are, you know, trying to enslave everybody and make this place suck. But it's gotten better because I've met people like you all, like everybody here in this chat, and everybody in the community, that we all are working to get to make this place better and to break out from this beast system that's been set up around us. So it does get better. To me, it's better. Like, I would never go back to not knowing for anything, yeah. Even going through all the depression and the stress and the ridicule and the name calling and being told I shouldn't breed or I shouldn't have children. You know, I wouldn't trade any of it to go back, you know.
Your reaction is exactly my reaction when I proved to myself satanic pedophiles do exist.
Yeah.
yeah. Talk about world shattering and clash and crushing of all reality, and realizing what things were really about. But yeah, so the idea of anarchy, we have to change that, right? Because anarchy has become a negative term.
Yeah.
So now I've decided we're synchronists. We're not anarchists.
Yeah.
Right? I like we're that synchronists. Term.
And the friendship agenda, what you're discussing of like finding the people who you can actually speak to, they're everywhere, guys. I just want to point this out to the listeners. They're everywhere. But you got to open your mouth. You've got to let them know that you're a freak, because I've seen this over and over again where people think they have no one to talk to, and then they find out their neighbor actually was all into this and they could have been talking to him for years.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. Most people are afraid to speak up because they're afraid of the ridicule. Nobody wants to be that guy.
That's all social media's fault.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, for me, I was really private about it for probably about a year before I started speaking about it publicly. And I just decided that it was just too important. It was too big of a deal. It was, you know, because my main motivation was my children. You know, I have three children. And for me, I was just like, wow, I can't, as a parent, allow my children to grow up in a world that I know is a lie. I just can't do it. So I had
to. How inquisitive would your children be? And like James was saying, with the mystery still open, you know, we don't want the answers. I don't want to just be told I'm on a flat plane with ice walls and not know what's, you know, there's still mystery as to what's on the other side of the ice walls.
Yeah.
But I don't want it all laid out. The mystery is what we live for as humans, right?
Exactly. And I don't pretend to have to know all the answers as far as where we live or what this place actually looks like. I mean, I have my ideas, you know, but it's
the point is nobody does.
Nobody knows.
Some of them act like they do.
Right. Because nobody can get far enough away from it or outside of it to take a picture or view it from the outside.
Unless you're a Mason. Then you're in that special clique. Well, let's run through you guys real quick to let all the listeners know how they can find you. So, Jason Lindgren, let's start with you. Tell everybody all of how they can find you and what you want to offer.
Sure. I'm a talk show host and a documentary filmmaker. I do Crow 777 Radio with Crow 777. We've released two episodes a week. That's crow777radio.com. I also do a weekly live stream on my own YouTube channel called secretsofsaturn.com. And I have a film out called Shoot the Moon about Crow's work. And you can get that on Vimeo. Just look up Vimeo and Shoot the Moon and check out the documentary. It's all Crow's work. 6 terabytes worth of stuff. I had the fun challenge of going through and whittling through and making look awesome for a 2-hour film.
And what's great about your show is you guys are digging in. You're doing your homework. You're presenting new information. It's awesome.
Thank you. Yes, we do a lot of homework. I've written hundreds of hours of radio now.
Right. Yeah. People don't realize that you're working all week just to produce that hour.
That's absolutely correct.
If not all month or, you know, a lifetime of getting there. And then it definitely, you know, it's like being in college or anyway, you got to. Yes. Good. Because yes, guys, amazing stuff. What was the website again? Just so everybody got it.
It's crow777radio.com, and that's crow with two R's, crrow777radio.com.
There you go, guys. You definitely want to dig deep there. I've been following a lot of that lunacy going on. The moon wave was an amazing revelation that definitely set some things aflame. James, and tell everybody about you.
I've been writing books. My fifth book is called Best Apocalypse Ever. It's describing how these resets and the amnesia and the atheism.
This is the best apocalypse ever, isn't it? Sorry.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it truly is. And it's interesting that I find myself writing that. But since I found Flat Earth and Zetetics, I've noticed that the amnesia, the lies, the literally everything that's in pain around you, even the electrical uncomfortableness that's required for you to raise above and to start to question things, is all a necessary, important part of the rapture. And that this is a consent-based rapture that we're here for inside Dojo Earth, to psychologically climb out of this pit and realize the truth. It's part of an alchemical process where we're turning ourselves from lead into gold. I run a live stream every morning from 11 a.m. Eastern time. It's about an hour long show. And basically we're reinventing our approach to the world and the lies that we face in that. And we're actually finding out that these lies are good, that they're helping us gain discernment and find new ways to understand these invisible electrical fields that are all around us. These fields that we call love, hate, strife, mystery, all of that are just seven-dimensional electricity. And that if we change our approach to these things, we end up in a much, much more firm psychological footing where we can embrace mystery, where we can embrace flat earth, where we can embrace a cosmology that's different for every single person, because that would seem to me to be more godlike, the idea that each of us would be our own fractal of God, which would mean we would have our own macaroni drawing of what the universe truly looks like, instead of everyone having a Cracker Jack kind of cosmology that comes out of a box that we just simply open up and place on the table and say, hey, God, I figured it out. I took the standard number 3 and put it on the table, and there, I've solved the mystery. So it's a whole new approach to looking at things from a psychological, almost therapeutic way of just being more comfortable in your skin and your body and how you see the world.
So techniques that help people like Karen and myself as we start to realize the world is not at all what we think, and then what do we do?
That's right.
Now what do I do? And Karen, I absolutely saved you for the last so that we could talk about Flattoberfest and make sure that everybody gets over here to Greenville, South Carolina. And, you know, I'm going to be there, guys. I'll invite a few special kids back to the house, but I can't bring y'all. but I do live very, very close. And strangely enough, Flattoberfest, Greenville is slated to be Sprint Curiosity's first smart city of America. So you will find yourself in 5G world. And on top of that, the one place that we're able to, that Karen was able to snag for an open conference where masks might even be prohibited, but certainly not enforced. And that you will be a free being here in Greenville where there's no mandatory restrictions. But at the same time, this thing's set up at the Shriners Center. Yes, at the heart of Freemasonry. I didn't even know we had a Shriners Center in Greenville. I'm really shocked, but I'm so excited to get there, Karen. So let's tell everybody about Flattoberfest.
Yeah, flattoberfest.com is the website that you can go to get all the information. And it's going to be held on October 24th, 2020, which is a Saturday. It's the Saturday before Halloween. And we're going to have it at the Greenville Shrine Center, like you said, and it's a great place because it's got a huge, huge ballroom, a big parking lot. It's on the outskirts of town. There's a kitchen there. There's a bar there. Everything, all the facilities are there. So really, nobody has to leave the whole day. So we're going to have talks, presentations, mix it up, some music. We'll have food there all day long. So it's going to be a great time for everybody to come and have free, open conversation. And we're also having an exhibit that's going to be there all day, put on by Cami Nodel and Zachary Zabala, where they're going to have a How the World Works exhibit, which is basically their ideas on how the realm works using electromagnetism. Nice. So they're going to have all kinds of cool scientific stuff for people, those who like to get geeky.
Yeah, I'm one of them.
Yeah,
and I know that your hope in this becomes more of a community. It's not about going and listening to lectures as much as it is about meeting everybody there, right?
Exactly. Exactly. But I do like having the people put presentations on because, you know, we're always all still learning.
Oh, absolutely.
And also for people who have friends that they're able to get to convince to come to the event with them who aren't fully on board yet or who still have a lot of questions, this is going to be the perfect place for that person to, you know, get overloaded with information and things to think about for weeks to come.
Absolutely. My friends are all driving up from Texas, so people know they want and they're ready. So guys, we're coming, you four, you three. I keep counting myself in there. I'll be there. But yeah, they're coming. There's no doubt about it. And folks, you know, this could be the last conference ever. So, you know, get a chance to get out there. No, that's a sad statement. I don't really believe that's true at all. I believe this is the great moment. You know, this is the blossoming. This is the catalyst where humanity finds its humanity, right?
Yeah, it really seems to be that way.
Yeah,
it's already happening. Yeah,
it's great. Yeah.
So we're going to dig much deeper, guys. We're going to take this into the members section. I want to know what they think about 2020 and all that's going on. We're going to get much deeper, much conspiratorial, dig into the mystery and try and unveil as much as we can without disrupting our true heart field that we want all of you to feel. Because that's what this is all about, is community, friendship, truth, love, and trying to find what we all know in our hearts is life and what it's all supposed to be about. We know that. So why isn't the world there? And when you start to discover things like flat earth and take that to another level of dismantling your reality and realize what you really do know, what you really can prove, and life becomes way more amazing. And we're going to get deep into that on the other side. So I hope you'll come to freemantv.com and subscribe to get the bonus hours and to be a producer here on the show, because it's the members that keep this show going and keep us free so that we can have our own private server so that we can say whatever we want, not worrying about whether or not Google agrees. So that's the beauty of the members and member section, and what it does for all of you is it keeps this completely censor free and free to you. So thank you all. I hope you will come over and subscribe, and always give good thanks to Steve Mercer for just being that hidden cog behind this machine that just keeps everything rolling. And of course, if you have guest suggestions and you want to, any topics you want us to cover, write Steve at producersteve@freemantv.com. And you can always write me, freeman@freemantv.com. And please follow me on Twitter. You will find so much information there. I hope that you'll go and just run through my thread. Just click my smiling little face with my extraterrestrial picture. And space is going to be a hard one for me to give up, guys. I'm telling you. but we're going to get deep into some crazy conspiracy on the other side. I hope you guys will come and become members and join us in there, because it's a wild time. And no holds bar in there, because we're all family there. So thank you all so much, and we will see you next week.